Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Small Talk, a show about small business for small business. Here's your host, Mark S. Lee.
Good morning and welcome to Small Talk with Mark S. Lee, brought to you by Domino's. Yes, the last weekend of winter. I'm so happy to say that because spring starts this Wednesday, March the 20th. We are so excited. And one of the reasons you do not hear Doak's voice this morning, and we have my good friend Chad is sitting in this morning, is Doak is actually down in Lakeland, Florida for his annual Detroit Tigers trip. And he always goes this time of the year because when he comes back, he can officially say it's spring. And the Tigers will be starting up, as you know, in early April. So, Doak, we miss you this morning. I know you're having a great time down there. Bring back that warm weather. We did have a nice day this past Thursday. It's a little bit rainy, a little bit windy, but we got a taste of spring. So I want you all to enjoy this last weekend of winter because Wednesday, we're going to be having some fun for the next several months. All right. With all that said and done, as you know, this is your source for entrepreneurship for the great city of Detroit, the state of Michigan, as well as across the country, because the show is aired or is streamed nationally via radio.com. And we do have people listening from across the country. I want to thank all of you. I get many emails and requests to LinkedIn and other forms of social media. We appreciate you all. So just sit back and relax and enjoy that nice hot cup of coffee, as I always like to say, with a great lineup of guests. And starting with a wonderful young lady, Ms. Ilana Rue, and she's the president and CEO of the Detroit Historical Society, a role that she took this past July of 18. And she's a lifelong Detroit area resident, and she has spent her entire career in the nonprofit sector. Ilana, good morning, and thank you for joining me on St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
I know. Happy St. Patrick's Day, Mark. How fun to spend it with you.
It is fun. I got the green beer. Actually, the coffee's nice
people,
and green. It's the green coffee this morning.
Yes, sir.
I did a little bit of Irish cream in there. How's that? How are you?
I'm terrific. It's great to be here.
I'm so glad to have you. And congratulations, by the way, on a wonderful event last night, right?
Thank you.
The Lindell AC, is that right?
Yes, the Lindell AC, America's first sports bar. We did have a great event. It was off the hook. A lot of great stories told last night. And I invite people to come down for the next 3 months to the Detroit Historical Museum. We have recreated the Lindell AC legendary bar in the lower level of the museum. So come by and see it.
Well, you and I had the opportunity to go last year. It was phenomenal. Brought back some memories. And you and I were chatting before the show today that even as a youngster, I used to pass that building all the time, and I would actually just walk in. And when you walked into that building, you could just feel the history. I mean, I'm not talking about history, Detroit sports history.
Absolutely.
And you just almost, it's like, as I'm looking to you, I'm talking to you right now, I can just see the old pictures. And last day, just recreated everything, brought back many, many memories.
Yeah, we have all those great pictures on the wall.
Yeah.
So it was remarkable. Actually, the folks that we worked with, Melodies and Memories, to put this exhibit together, were able to purchase all of those photos from an estate sale. And the people had no idea what they had. So it's remarkable.
Well, let's back up. Let's pull the lens back. You're relatively new to the Detroit Historical Society.
8 months.
Talk to our listeners across the country who may not be aware of the Detroit Historical Society. Exactly what is it?
Sure. Well, the Detroit Historical Society, we run two museums in Detroit. The Detroit Historical Museum, which is on Woodward and Kirby in Midtown, which is a wonderful place to be. And also the Dawson Great Lakes Museum on our gem, the Belle Isle downtown. And we also have a collection of over 250,000 artifacts that are relevant to the city of Detroit that are stored in a huge warehouse on historic Fort Wayne.
Yeah. Yeah, I had the opportunity to go into Dawson. First time ever, phenomenal down there.
We love it.
Certainly the Detroit Historical Museum.
Mm-hmm.
That was everybody's field trip back in the day. I remember when I was in school.
The streets of old Detroit.
They still have the cobblestone streets down there.
Yes, we do.
Oh,
we'll never change it.
I love it. That's wonderful. So what brought you to the museum? You had a wonderful career, obviously, in other areas. But what was the appeal of coming to the Historical Society?
Yeah,
the museum,
I've spent my whole career in nonprofits, but always in healthcare, which is wonderful. But I am a museum junkie and a history geek, and to be able to pair those things and my love of history and appreciation for it with what I do for a living. Honestly, it's magical. I think I told you this the first time we met. Yeah. I think I have the best job in Detroit. It is really a cool place to work.
You did say that. And speaking of this cool place to work, that little rotunda area, I believe, you got the original stadium from Tiger Stadium.
Right, yeah. That's the LSE Gallery of Culture.
Is that the actual sign?
It is. We have a couple more, too. We're really fortunate in the fact that people think of us when historic buildings close, and certainly we're talking with the Joe right now.
Yeah,
and it's important to retain and take care of these artifacts for future generations.
Well, you know you're going to start tearing down the Joe within the next month.
Yeah, we're talking with them. Yeah, okay. We have some things set aside that we are really interested in order to help tell that story.
Well, and to those across the country, the Joe is the famous Joe Louis Arena, which certainly has closed down a couple years ago. The Detroit Red Wings and Detroit Pistons now play at the Little Caesars Arena. But I was reading recently that they said inside the arena is literally everything is stripped. Mm-hmm. It's literally just the shell of the inside of the arena. And it's going to take several months. They're not going to pull the arena. They're going to take it down step by step, essentially.
Yeah, so, that's what I heard.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So let's go back to the Historical Society. You had a wonderful event, the Detroit 67 Project, which has won all types of accolades. Talk to us about that project, and you are sharing with me you're going to be going, I think, overseas to talk about this project. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. This is the Detroit 67, Looking Back to Move Forward exhibit was really probably the most transformational thing that the Historical Society has done in our almost 100-year career. And we took on telling the story of the uprising that started on July 23rd of 1967. And, you know, some controversy. Not everyone was sure that this is a story that we wanted to bring back up again. But the board and the staff and many community partners and funders encouraged us to move ahead and do this. And what was different about it was the way that we decided to develop the exhibit and the community outreach programs. Usually we look at the artifacts we have. This is what museums do. And then we decide the story we want to tell, and we kind of put it together that way. We did it in the really the opposite way this time, where we reached out to community members who had lived through that time and took over 500 oral histories of people who were right there in the middle of it, and then built the exhibit around what their stories were, what they remembered, and what was important to them, and made sure that all of the stories were told. Even from a media perspective, it was fascinating. If you watch the news at the time, and you can see this in our exhibit, there were so many people interviewed, but virtually no women or people of color were interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
So it tells the story of it's a point in time in Detroit's history. And the reason that we did it was so that we could not make the same mistakes going forward. That's why history is so important.
You know, I got to share with you, I was probably one of those initially skeptical because I lived through the riots. And I had this conversation over the phone. And when I say I lived through riots, my parents actually moved from, we moved from the west side of the city to northwest Detroit probably a year, 6 months to a year before the riots broke out. And I remember, I shared this story many times. I talked about it on Fox 2 News. I wrote an expose say once I got over that hump. I wrote a long expose at Detroit News printed recently as part of their series. But I think as a youngster, I remember looking up and seeing tanks going up the street. And I remember off the distance seeing smoke, off the distance and the fire truck. So a lot of young people don't understand why more mature people like me, we didn't want to talk. I didn't talk about it for a long time. A lot of young people are like, No, I think to a lot of more mature Detroiters, you're right, it scarred us.
Yeah.
And I remember turning on the local news. I shared this with you over the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's showing people throwing bricks through the windows of their own neighborhoods and running out with TVs.
Yeah.
But then as I went to, I was fortunate enough to be invited to the Detroit 67 announcement.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a chance to go. It was it was jarring. But I got to tell you, Lana, it was a wonderful experience. I applaud the museum for doing it.
Well, thank you. We need to have difficult conversations.
Yeah.
And I think that in this day and age, museums are one of the only places people trust anymore to really tell the facts. And so it's important that we're responsible. Great news for us. We won the top three awards given to museums in the United States. And also, I'll be going to Dubrovnik, Croatia in September to present to a global audience. I mean, people paid attention. Part of what was magical about this is the way that we engage the community. and that we had over 100 community partners. And this was a new thing for the Historical Society. We had been very place-based, where things happened within our four walls. And this gave us the opportunity to go out into the community, you know, to help, you know, clean up a park, to offer economic empowerment forums to people in the neighborhoods. And this is something we need to continue. And that's really what my goal is. As I move forward being a new leader, people ask me all the time, like, so what's next?
Yeah.
And what's next is the next 100 years. And we need to make sure that we are a museum that tells all of Detroit's stories.
It's a Detroit jewel. And as we talk about what's next, you know, you have a couple of challenges you want to try to address as you think about the future as a new leader for the organization,
right,
which was becoming a little bit more, I think, of engaging the Detroit community and becoming a reflection of the community. Is that right?
Well, exactly. I mean, we have every single day, we have students from the city of Detroit, mostly third and fourth graders, that are coming through our museum. And right now, they don't see themselves reflected very much. And that's really important to me. It's, you know, I've gained great clarity in talking to community leaders and others about the great work we've done and the way that we're viewed. But going forward, and as the city has changed, you know, we're 88% people of color now, mm-hmm, and our exhibits and our programs need to be more reflective of that. And my goal is that people will not only feel welcome, but they'll feel invited, and that they will see themselves on our walls and through the very positive stories about what all Detroiters have contributed to our history.
Yeah. You know, I got to tell you, everybody knows I'm also an adjunct at Eastern Michigan. I had, mm-hmm, this exact same conversation this past week in one of my classes, this past Tuesday. And we talked about that very topic, mm-hmm, of when, you know, I teach marketing classes, of how people want to do business with people that look like them,
mm-hmm,
or they want products, sure, that appeal to them. It's no disrespect to anybody else. But when you're looking from a business standpoint, when you're looking from a marketing perspective, you know, people, the demographics of the country continue to change. And,
right,
and we know what the demographics of the city of Detroit and the metropolitan area are. I applaud you for really putting that at the forefront, because we have such a cultural jewel down there. People love that museum, but it should continue to appeal to everybody. And I think you also told me the Detroit 67 project brought in so many people probably into that museum, and even from the neighborhoods, probably for the very first time.
Yes, it did, absolutely. And we want them to keep coming back. I mean, you know, it's really, really important to us to engage in the community. We want people who live around the corner to feel that we are their museum also. And this is something we're talking about in the Midtown Cultural District, all of us. All of the leaders are interested in really making this change so that we are inviting to the whole community.
You know, we have about a minute or so remaining. So any other major events on the horizon that you're bringing into the museum, and even the Dawson as well?
We're about to embark on a historic reimagining of the outdoors around the Dawson Great Lakes Museum. We're going to be adding new event space and a kayak launch right on the Detroit River.
All right.
So we're breaking ground, hopefully next month when it thaws, right? It's,
yes,
it's spring here. and also coming up, we're in partnership with the Grand Prix. They're celebrating 30 years of the Grand Prix here in Detroit. And so this summer, we are going to have some really cool exhibits and opportunities for people to come down and see.
This is getting scary. I know I'm getting old. I remember the very first Detroit Grand Prix. And it used to go through the streets of downtown Detroit.
Yes, it did. Yeah, we're going to be recognizing that. We got all the posters from all the years, and a neat partnership.
Well, and the last question is, how can people get more information, website, about all these great events upcoming?
Certainly on social media. You can find out information on everything, though, at DetroitHistorical.org. So, you know, please come check us out. The Detroit 67 exhibition is going to be open for another 14 months.
Okay.
So there is still time for people to come down and see that as well.
Well, Ilana Rue, I want to thank you very much for coming in. I could talk to you all day long.
I know. We have fun, don't we?
I love that museum. I love the society. I think you guys are doing some great things.
Well, thanks for coming last night.
And congratulations for last night. Thank you for the invitation. I appreciate that. All right, that's Ilana Rue, and she's with the Detroit Historical Society. And go out and check it out, if you can, please, on St. Patrick's Day and beyond. There'll be more guests at this commercial break on Small Talk with Mark Esley, brought to you by Domino's. Good morning. Welcome back to Small Talk with Mark Esley, brought to you by Domino's. Yes, on this St. Patrick's Day. All right, I'm so pleased to welcome my very special next guest. She's actually on the phone. She's from Detroit, but she also resides in the great city of Charlotte, North Carolina. She's been kind enough to give us a call in this morning, and we're going to have a great conversation surrounding Women's History Month and some other things that are happening here in Detroit with a major program that she's putting on, a wonderful individual, Dr. Lisa Wicker.
Good morning. How are you, Mark?
I'm doing just fine. How are things in the great state of Carolina?
It's wonderful, just about 65 degrees, sunny. It's great.
Well, to make you feel better, you know, to make me feel better, you said 65 degrees. Well, this past Thursday in Detroit, we were up in the 60s. Now, today is back to normal, but for that one day, we got your weather.
That's right. That's good. Yes.
All right. Well, let's talk to you about, you know, Career Mastered and kind of give our listeners a very brief overview of you and your relationship to the city of Detroit. I know you're in Carolina, North Carolina.
Yes.
Talk to us briefly about Career Mastered before we start to unpack that a little bit further.
Oh, great. Okay, thanks a lot. So Career Mastered is a women's-to-women's business collaborative that started 5 years ago in Detroit with the Women's History Month Awards celebration for women that lead, who are iconic and powerful. And we're excited this year to celebrate 5 years in three cities. Started in Detroit. We're now in Charlotte as well as New York. And so this year we're going to have several events, and I'll talk to you more about that. But that's basically it, where we allow women to network, we help to advance their careers, and we do that in a number of execution strategies relative to events, publications, and awards.
Yeah, and I've been very fortunate. I've gone to a couple of your events that you had in Detroit, and I remember the iconic, I believe, Diana Lewis was acknowledged 1 year, and yeah. You know, the legendary, for those across the country, Diana Lewis was a legendary broadcaster here in Detroit for years and worked on a local ABC affiliate, WXYZ Channel 7. Her daughter's now taking reins. And certainly doing a wonderful job, Glenda, a good friend of mine. Hi, Glenda, if you're listening. But, you know, you've had some other outstanding winners, and you purposely would do that program in the month of March because this is Women's History Month. Talk about that as well.
Right. So really, the program is centered around Women's History Month, recognizing that in order to move forward, we have to understand our history and pay homage to those women who have set the trail. And so our awards really are centered around history makers, women who help to move and network and make a way for the next generation of leaders. And so, for example, when you talk about Glenda Lewis and her mom, Diana, they were awarded together because they are the only mother-daughter anchors who in America have worked together on a television network.
Hmm.
And so that's powerful.
That is powerful.
Others, such as Florine Mark, was our living legend, the first one in the first year of Career Mastered, and we know her history. She's right there in the marketplace of Detroit, who's done a marvelous, wonderful job with her business, but she set the path for a lot of us to be able to understand the entrepreneurship avenue and to network and mentor those women that want to do similar or have opportunities such as she set for us. And so that's kind of the whole idea. Career Mastered is the catalyst for another arm of the business that we have, which is called Excel Village. And that is a 501c3 where the monies that we gain from Career Mastered primarily go into that program to set the stage for young girls ages 10 through 17 or 5th through 12th grade to be able to learn about the careers of STEM, mm-hmm. Fab, and that we've termed called STEM Fab, which is, of course, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math, but we've added the components of finance, arts, and business. And so we're delighted about the fact that we have a continuum of women, not just a certain age, but the demographic goes across from the early ages of 10 all the way to 60 plus.
And I want to unpack about the young people in a moment. I want to just kind of wrap up the conversation briefly about the magazine. And you launched that magazine and publication, and you know, I follow you on social media. I know we follow each other on social media. That is a high quality publication that you put out. Is it monthly, Lisa? Is it monthly?
Well, yeah, no, it's quarterly.
Quarterly.
And there's a little backstory to that, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, thank you for being on our board of directors for the magazine.
You're welcome.
The idea around the magazine really is about who I am in terms of problem solving. So I believe whenever there's a problem, there's a solution. And the magazine was born based upon the fact that for several years we had provided awards to women, but we couldn't get major publications to take the stories and pick up those women's stories. And so I said, well, why not make your own magazine? And so here we are with our own quality magazine called Career Master, Advancing Women's Leadership. It is published quarterly. We actually launched it in Manhattan, in New York last year, along with Charlotte and Detroit. And so it is doing very well. We do it both in print form and digital form. And people can subscribe online and or subscribe to get their purchase through mail of the print quality of those magazines.
You know, and this is just a personal opinion. I usually don't opine, but I am in this one time. Isn't that really a sad state of affairs, though, when you didn't have a publication that would pick up certain stories about certain right. individuals, and, you know, in this particular case, women? You know, we're yep. coming out of Black History Month in the month of February. And unfortunately, this, you know, and I say, I was interviewed on another medium outlet recently asking my thoughts on Black History Month. I said, you know, in the ideal world, Lisa, in the ideal world, there shouldn't be a Black History Month in the ideal right. world, right? But the right. fact of the matter is, it's necessary. And because yes. we should be talking about it every single day, naturally. Same thing with the Women's History Month in the context of, you know, that if you look into the context of that conversation, my point is in the ideal world. But there is a need for it because, like you said, in from a publication standpoint, you know, your publication is focusing on certainly professional women, career focused individuals who are making the moves. And I applaud you for doing that. So there is a very strong need, certainly in that particular space at this point still.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the other things that I've recognized is that, you know, everybody will not be Oprah, and I take nothing yeah. from her. Yeah. But at the end of the day, there are still extraordinary women doing extraordinary things every day. And it needs to be published, and it needs to go across the globe about what women are doing. And so I'm just part of that solution.
Absolutely. We're talking to Dr. Lisa Wicker this morning from Charlotte, North Carolina, although she's a Detroiter. And so she actually goes back and forth between both cities. So this morning she happens to be in Carolina, in North Carolina, and she is responsible, the founder of Career Master. And we're just unpacking a couple of points of this important conversation. Now, I do want to segue into what you're doing specifically in Detroit with our young people. And you have some specific events that are taking place in April, I believe. Talk to us exactly about what you're doing to help the young people in the city and a chance to talk about the upcoming events next month.
Okay, well, we're totally thrilled that we're presenting our first summit for girls. It's called Excel Village Girls STEM Fab Power Summit. It's a half-a-day workshop. The presenting sponsor is Ally Financial, and girls in grades 5th through 12th can qualify to apply to attend this summit on scholarships. So each girl that's selected will receive $200 scholarship to attend the half-a-day workshop, which will be held on Saturday, April 13th, mm-hmm. from 8 until 1, and they will engage in interactive workshops in science, technology, engineering, math, finance, arts, and business. And we have some powerful women that will pour into this group of young girls, 50, by the way, can attend. Mm-hmm. We have 50 scholarships, as I said, presented by a grant from Ally Financial. And some of the speakers for this event will be Tati Amari from Channel 4, mm-hmm. and Gail Perry Mason. We have Doretha Kelly.
Hey, Gail and I went to high school together, Gail Perry Mason and I in Detroit. Isn't that amazing?
Well, she's phenomenal.
She's wonderful.
Of course, she knows all about money. And we many more things, but we're also going to have Dr. Sabrina Jackson, LaTanya Orr, and many others. But the idea is there will be three concurrent workshops. One of them will be based upon understanding what women do in journalism, and that's going to be Tati. We're going to also have a session for 5th and 6th graders on the art of dance. We will teach them what dancing is about, because that's an opportunity for a career, just as being a journalist. We have a workshop on investments, savings, budgets, and credits for the high school girls. And then we have a workshop for the 7th through 9th graders to talk about the essence of diversity and the colors of life. And Dr. Sabrina is going to be the person for that. And then they will work on a science project, which is the major cost of the program, where the kits that we've ordered, they will be brought in for the girls to work on. And I have an engineer that's going to help us with that portion of the program, and the vision boards that they will leave with to talk about their future and what they can start to work on.
Okay. And we have a couple of minutes remaining. You've done this in other cities as well. How's the overall response been?
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. We just finished in Charlotte 50 girls. We had a wait list of 30 others. And they wrote thank you notes, and they just could not say enough about how wonderful this is, an opportunity for them to learn about things that perhaps they hadn't thought of. So we're excited, and this is exactly what Career Mastered is about. It's a catalyst for the next generation.
That's terrific. And in closing, in our closing minute or so together, talk again one more time about the specifics pertaining to the Detroit event, the specific date, the time, and okay. the location, and how can people sign up and get more information as well?
Okay. Thank you for asking. Absolutely. So it's Saturday, April 13th. It's the Excel Village Girls Power Summit. It's called STEM Fab. It's going to be held in Detroit on Shelby Street at the new Space Lab. It's a workplace, a space where you can gather it for work. And then they can apply by going to excelvillage.org. That's excelvillage.org. The applications are there for Detroit. And the time factor for Detroit has been extended. So girls or their parents can download the application. It's extended to March the 22nd. So although it was March the 1st, we extended Detroit to March the 22nd that they need to get the applications in to our office.
You know, I got to ask you, how often are you back in Detroit? Because I know you worked at a major auto company back here for a long time. But how often are you back here?
So I try to get back there at least 4 times a year. I will be back there very soon, in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Well, you know we miss you here, don't you? You know that.
Well, I know.
We miss you.
Really, it's really about the weather. You know,
it's about the weather.
And I love the choice that I have, and the choice is to be away from there during the winter. And so I do plan to be back there very soon.
Well, Dr. Lisa Wicker, I want to thank you very much for calling in this morning from your other hometown, although your real hometown is the Motor City. But we'll lend you out a little bit. It's all good. But we want to...
Mark, yeah, may I say one thing? I know we have to go, but we are so going to have a reception, and we're going to have a talk with Tico Davis for Career Masters, and that's going to be on April the 18th, a Thursday evening, and that's at careermastered.com if women want to participate and get to hear that conversation with the legendary Tico Davis.
Well, Dr. Lisa Wicker, I want to thank you very much, Lisa, for calling in and giving us the information, and we appreciate you as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mark, for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Go out and have a great day.
Bye now.
Thank you. There'll be more guests after this commercial break on Small Talk with Mark Esley, brought to you by Domino's.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning and welcome back to Small Talk with Mark Esley, brought to you by Domino's. I hope you're sitting back and enjoying the conversation. What a great conversation so far this morning. We started out the conversation about the Detroit Historical Society and the great things that are happening. We had a wonderful exhibit or an event last night celebrating the old Glendale AC. For those of you who don't know what the Glendale AC was, it was a legendary bar, which catered to all the great sporting events, and legends who would come to the city would go visit. AC stands for the Athletic Club. And then our second segment, we focus on Women's History Month and some wonderful programs taking place in Detroit addressing our young ladies. That will be some major events taking place in the month of April with Dr. Lisa Wicker. And this segment is so different. But before I get into this segment, as you know, I give my shout outs at every time at this part of the show every single week. So you might be sitting back here in Detroit and listening on AM 1270. I give a shout out to them for giving me this forum each and every single week to have a conversation with you. And that's AM 1270. You might be sitting back and reading Free Press and also reading your local, your mobile technology locally. Sit back and enjoy the conversation. Or you might be listening across the country, across our many .coms, including radio.com, WWJNewsRadio.com, LeeGroupInnovation.com, SoundCloud.com, and others out there at DetroitHub.com. So we want you to sit back and relax and enjoy your hot cup of coffee over your local newspaper as we continue the conversation with our very special next guest, Ms. Elizabeth Luther, and she is the Detroit Program Manager for Capital Impact Partners, and where she leads the policy and research agenda in the city for this wonderful organization. Elizabeth, good morning, and thanks for joining me. How are you?
Morning, Mark. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you. You recently had the opportunity of attending the State of the City address by the mayor. Is that correct?
I wasn't actually there. I was watching it on live stream like so many of the rest
but
of us.
But a lot of the things that are happening as a result of the organization, which we'll come back to in a second, were addressed as part of the Mayor's State of the City address recently.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's start with the very basics and talk to us about Capital Impact Partners and your role over there.
Sure. Thanks.
Sure.
So Capital Impact, we're essentially a nonprofit lender or a social impact investor. Those are two ways I kind of like to frame what the organization does, depending on who I'm talking to. The technical title is a community development financial institution, and that's actually a designation by the federal government, which enables us and encourages us to lend capital to projects, but with a mission. And so we, around the country, are really focused on financing projects that support people's ability to access economic opportunity. In Detroit, that means we end up financing a lot of multifamily and mixed-use housing projects with a focus on supporting people across the income spectrum. So we finance a lot of affordable housing. And we also support projects that relate to education, so like charter schools, healthy food, so grocery stores, for instance, and a number of other areas. We complement that lending activity with a number of programs and some policy work. And so I run our programs locally in Detroit.
Okay. And so a lot of this activity that you're focused on, Capital Impact Partners, really is primarily focused in the neighborhoods as well. Is that right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so talk to us about the types of programs that you have in those neighborhoods. I know you have some data points that you want to share with the listeners as well.
Sure. So while we initially came and started working in Detroit with a focus on the Woodward Corridor, we've now begun expanding our focus to many of the different neighborhoods around the city, kind of in alignment with a number of other strategies that are taking place in the city to support the strong commercial corridors that we have that haven't seen a lot of investment over the past 3 to 4 to 5 decades. And so the programs that we run are really focused on supporting neighborhood development and economic opportunity at the neighborhood level. One of them is called the Stay Midtown program, and it's a program that provides a rental subsidy for residents experiencing a housing cost burden in the Midtown area. And so it supports them through a rental subsidy as they are potentially experiencing rental rate increases due to the stabilizing market in that area. Another program that we work on is called the Equitable Development Initiative. And that one is really focused on the kind of the supply of real estate developers in the city of Detroit. So we looked at our whole portfolio of lending a couple of years ago and really realized that around 90% of the money that we were lending in Detroit was not going to firms led by real estate developers of color. It was primarily going to larger firms and non-local firms or local firms, but those not led by minorities. We wanted to figure out a way to flip the kind of ratio there and start lending to more local real estate developers and developers of color and folks really like working on projects in neighborhoods throughout the city who are from those neighborhoods or from areas around those neighborhoods. And so about a year and a half ago, we kicked off this program. We're now in the second year, and it provides training, technical assistance, and in some cases, financing for emerging local real estate developers of color. And, you know, one thing that struck me about the State of the City when I was watching it was that the whole framing of the State of the City I found to be really helpful and positive, but also very realistic. There was a component that was about the built environment of the city, which is what a lot of us see when we're thinking about Detroit's revitalization or stabilization or challenges, right? We see that reflected in the built environment. And so there was a section that focused on real estate development and its role in shaping perceptions and then reality in the city. And a number of the developers and the teams that were highlighted we're working with in some way, right? Some are associated with the program that I just mentioned, either as mentors in that program or as developers in that program. And then others are individuals or organizations we're working with just as a lender to support.
And that's why, though, Elizabeth, that's why this conversation is important, because I think, you know, we all know about the fabulous stuff that's happening in downtown, midtown, Quarktown, and now, you know, other parts of the city. But the reason I was so intrigued to have you in is that I love the fact that, you know, like you said, we're beginning to expand and try to do some things into the neighborhoods. And I noticed the mayor did talk about that as part of a State of the City address. I mean, the first few years, you know, we got to start revitalizing Detroit somewhere. So that revitalization started, you know, starting in the downtown. Downtown's booming and other parts of Detroit. But the other parts of the city are still kind of like, you know, we're still grappling with how do we continue to bring those parts back. And what you're doing, what Capital Impact Partners is doing, is really beginning to identify the key touch points, the pain points in the neighborhoods. I love what you're saying about getting engaged with people of color and developers of color and other like-minded individuals. So talk to us about what you're looking for with the other developers that you might be looking to partner with. What are some of the things that stand out for you that you really that might be important for you as you're considering, you know, working with others across the neighborhoods?
Sure. So for the program in particular, we're looking for real estate developers who are committed to the city, so who are kind of in it for the long haul, interested in a broader mission beyond just real estate development, although being successful as a real estate developer is a great goal in and of itself, but really the broader mission of contributing to improving neighborhoods in Detroit. So we're looking for that. We are looking to work with folks with experience to some degree, but who are really trying to figure out how to get that leg up or move on to a larger project. Those are for folks in the program. In terms of just for projects around the city generally, we really are focused again on projects in neighborhood commercial corridors, and those can be more challenging than maybe projects in the greater downtown or midtown for a number of reasons. But projects in those areas and developers with some level of experience who are committed to, the mission of improving those areas in Detroit. And when it comes to housing, you know, we're looking for housing. If we're financing a housing project, we're looking for housing that has an affordability component, because we recognize that Detroiters are kind of all over the place across the income spectrum, but it's a very high poverty city, and there's a need for more high quality.
You made a good point earlier. You talked about you mentioned rent, and rents are going up, and certainly there's a lot of discussion about housing affordability and ensuring that. I know the mayor has made a comment about in some of these developments that, you know, a percentage of them should have some type of affordability component to that. Understanding that there's still, like you said, challenges of a lot of people across the city when it comes to income and affordability challenges. So it sounds like, you know, you're very cognizant of that as well. I asked you earlier, I didn't give you a chance to, I apologize for jumping in. I think you also brought some data points that you wanted to share, or a recap of some information in terms of the types of investments, or do you have that information you want to share?
Sure. Well, you know, I did want to kind of highlight a couple of the projects that were highlighted in the State of the City as well. And so, because two of the folks who were mentioned are mentors in our program to support real estate developers of color, and those are Richard Hosey and Cliff Brown. And we have worked with them on financing some projects of theirs as well. Richard Hosey rehabbed an old Hebrew school in Detroit's Midtown neighborhood a couple of years ago. And Cliff contributed to some of the first new development
in the Co
at West Village. Mm-hmm. And they've both been really instrumental in sharing their experiences and supporting the folks in our program also. So it's really great to see that the folks that we're working with, borrowers who are committed to the same neighborhood development missions that we are also interested in really supporting kind of the network of others who want to do the same type of work. So those are two that I really wanted to mention. And then you know, in our current round of training that with the Equitable Development Initiative, one of the participants in that program, Sherita Smith, who's the executive director of the Grandmont Rosedale Development Corporation, her project was highlighted, which was great to see also. Mm-hmm. In terms of the program, yeah, there are just a couple of data points I wanted to share. We've been running it for 2 years. Right now, we're working with 19 emerging real estate developers of color in the city. Last year, we worked with 28. So that's a total of 47. And we have focused on multifamily and mixed-use training sessions over the course of 2018 and 2019. We work with 6 different technical assistance providers. And right now, 2 of the projects from last year are currently in the pre-development financing stage, which is great. So we're one of them is along the Avenue of Fashion. Another is near the Henry Ford campus in Midtown. So we're really happy to see some of those outcomes.
Okay, I'll close the minute or so together. Also, just kind of go through my notes here as well. And capital impact, the nonprofit community development financial institution, you have dispersed over more than $2 billion to revitalize communities over the last 30 years. And the organization's headquartered in Arlington, Virginia. And you have local offices here in Detroit and also Oakland, California. So I want to make sure I get the proper shout out to you as well. Anything you want to say in our closing 30 seconds or so in terms of more information, contact information, people get more information from you?
Sure. Yeah. So the website is www.capitalimpact.org. And you can there's a ton of information there. So you can find out all about our Detroit program and our other place-based work around the country. To date in Detroit, we of that over $2 billion dispersed nationally or in our portfolio, we've provided over $200 million in capital to projects in Detroit, and we're looking forward to continuing to further our work here.
Well, Elizabeth Luther, the Detroit Program Manager for Capital Impact Partners, I want to thank you very much for coming in and just providing us with an update on what's going on. Appreciate it so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. There'll be more guests after this commercial break on Small Talk with Mark Esley, brought to you by Domino's. Good morning. Welcome back to Small Talk with Mark Esley, brought to you by Domino's. On this St. Patrick's Day here in the Motor City and across the country and across the world, I hope you're getting ready to celebrate with that green beer and everything else that you're going to be doing today. I also hope you're enjoying the conversation. We're going to continue the conversation with our very next guest, Mr. Kevin Roach, and he's the CEO of the Methodist Children's Home Society and serves as the has served as a CEO since the summer of 2015 and brings 15 years of leadership in the child welfare and nonprofit world. Kevin, good morning, and thanks for joining me. How you doing?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Mark. Great to be here.
I see you wearing all that green today, huh?
You got it. So got to put a shout out there to everybody who brings in this day and certainly have enjoyed the weekend.
Absolutely. So let's start with the very basics, Kevin, and let's talk about the Methodist Children's Home Society. Kind of give us a brief overview of the organization and what you focus on.
Absolutely. Methodist Children's Home Society, I call it MCHS since it is a mouthful. MCHS has actually been around for over 100 years in the residential foster care adoption and independent living area. Independent living services are for those children aging out of the foster care system. And so on our main campus in Redford, right there at 6 Mile between Inkster and Beach, we house 60 children on our campus. But literally over 150 children and families we're serving throughout the each and every day in our adoption and foster care program as a whole.
So let's talk about some of those services. What are the types of services that you, in fact, the organization specifically will provide?
Yeah, I think at the heart of what we've been doing for over a century now has really been housing those children who have been abused and neglected. Mm. Our children come from all parts of the state and with all different backgrounds and experiences, Mark. The one thing that they do share in common is that profound abuse and neglect that they have survived. And so they find that sanctuary, that comfort, that stability, that treatment, that care, all the beyond 3 meals a day in a warm bed to recover from the past and, of course, have a bigger and brighter future. So that's really at the heart of what we've been doing. But, of course, complementing that for many of those children who don't necessarily need that residential care, which is essentially a modern-day orphanage, to kind of put that into context, mm-hmm. We do have an expansive foster care and adoption program as well as these independent living services.
You know, mm-hmm. you know, and as I think about Detroit, you know, our city certainly has gone through so many ups and downs over the years. Obviously, the economy and things have gone up and down, and things seem to be on the upswing. We have such a very unique city because, as we've all heard, when the country's in a recession, Detroit's in a depression. Obviously, going back several years ago, but obviously, just on the upswing. So my question is, in today's economic environment where things seem to be on the upswing, what about the number of kids and the challenges? Have you noticed an increase in the types of services that are in demand, or is it stabilized, or what?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mark, and I'll tackle that in kind of a twofold way. The first is that we know that from an abuse and neglect standpoint, that transcends socioeconomic class. Mm. It transcends economic period. There's myths out there, and I won't take the time to go through all of them, but essentially we know that it does count across all different races and classes and different types of families on that settings. And, of course, Detroit hasn't been immune to that in that case. But we're actually, over the last several years, have seen an upswing in those children and families who are surviving childhood trauma, who are surviving abuse and neglect. Primarily, that point of entry now is the opioid epidemic that, yeah. once again, Michigan, Detroit, the Midwest, and really the entire country is grappling with on that end. And so we've actually seen a surge and an increase in the number of children who are entering foster care, who need that additional support, who can't be with their family settings.
So can I ask you about this whole opioid addiction? How do you grapple with it? How do you deal with it? I mean, the kids are coming in, and what types of – how do you help them to grapple with that particular crisis that we're currently in?
Yeah, I mean, so many ways it's a forgotten generation. We're dealing with an opiate epidemic that's taking out more lives than the Afghan, Iraq, and Vietnam War combined in just 1 year. More families have been impacted truly by this epidemic just last year. And last year was in its first year when you have 72,000 Americans who have succumbed to the opioid epidemic. Now, they're surrounded by children, brothers and sisters. They're living behind grandchildren, nieces and nephews. This is something that's really striking so many. And so from the foster care side of things, those numbers are actually increasing, and we're seeing, of course, is that demand in services, that demand for that additional treatment and support, but in a new way of how the opioid epidemic really impacts these families. And so certainly I think the human service sector, the nonprofit organization, the child welfare field really is going to have to come together in a more concerted effort and look at the physical health, the behavioral health, the mental health, and making sure all of those are in line and in sync.
And we're talking to Kevin Roach. He's the CEO of the Methodist Children's Home Society out of Redford, Michigan. And, you know, as we talk about that particular addiction, I want to make something very clear. You know, those addictions, those challenges know no race, no ethnicity, no gender, no socioeconomic status, things like that. It could strike, excuse me, anyone at any point in time, your family. And it's, you know, from as you're talking, it kind of gives me chills because we know that there's a challenge there. When you talk about our young people, mm-hmm. you know, our future, and to see that they have these types of challenges that they must overcome or grapple with, you know, clearly what you're doing is certainly providing a valuable resource to those individuals as well and to their families.
Yeah, we know that certainly, Mark, more has to be done on that end. And I have your point is well taken that this is something that does not know any type of boundaries, that as much as we want to classify it or segment it into certain groups, that just isn't the case. And having worked with these families for some time and seeing children bury their parents and seeing children bury their uncles and vice versa even on that end, we know that this is a very challenging moment. And foster care and adoption, foster care, child abuse and neglect does not operate in a vacuum, and so doesn't the opiate epidemic. There are many different factors coming together, and the fact that those worlds are really colliding in a major way, it's be interesting to see what happens in these next several years and how everybody else responds.
And MCHS, if I understand, you're opening up a satellite office in the Motor City.
You got
Talk
it.
Talk to
so
us.
So we knew that with us serving more children and families in Detroit, we needed to have a much larger presence. We couldn't expect folks just to come out to us. We needed to be active in the communities that we were serving, be much more accessible. So we're really excited about this, and it really opens up a new chapter for us, Mark, and the fact that we have 80 acres in Radford campus. It's a beautiful location. It's a great sanctuary for these children and families. But we know that how the nonprofit model is changing and us being more mobile, more flexible, more nimble, more accessible to the constituents that we're serving, we need to come to them. We can't expect them to come to us. And so this gives us a great opportunity because we serve so many children and families in these communities, but to have a larger presence and, of course, to be part of that growth that the city of Detroit is really experiencing.
When is it going to open and where is it going to be located?
So we are located actually at Durfee Middle School next to Central High School, mm-hmm. or what now is Central. And we actually opened up a couple weeks ago to start serving. We haven't had our ribbon cutting yet, as we're waiting to hear back from a few folks who will take part in those festivities. But this will really focus on child abuse prevention and substance abuse with our clients. So in a completely different scope. But we're really excited to be kind of part of that new energy, part of that excitement, and once again, being available to these children and families.
Is that part of the life remodel project?
It is. Yeah. Yes.
So
yeah.
Little side story. I grew up in that part of Detroit, near Central High School.
Okay.
And that would have been the elementary school I would have gone to was Durfee.
Yeah.
Way back in the day.
Yeah.
And then I would have gone to Central High School. So I know that area very well. And I remember it was off of Glenwood, I believe.
You got it.
Area.
Yeah.
And way back in the day, there was a movie theater and all
wow.
this other stuff. Oh, yeah. So I'm a Detroiter.
Yeah, no kidding.
I tell people all the time, I could tell you more about this city and where I've lived. But that, I'm so glad to hear that Durfee is really becoming this innovation center and Chris Lambert, the team, and you are doing a wonderful job. Congratulations on that.
Yeah, it's exciting because this gives us a unique opportunity to actually partner with so many other groups. And I think that's one of the reasons why the Detroit is coming back in that way, is that we knew we can do it on our own. We mm-hmm. weren't going to head out and try to do this on our own. The more we could partner up with other like-minded organizations and even social enterprise groups and other companies that are really making looking to not necessarily tackle the issues that we're tackling, but just strengthen families and strengthen the community. That was really our primary motive of wanting to get involved and more engaged. And so Chris is fantastic. All the other tenants over there and Durfee is excited. We're just happy to be a small part of that.
Yeah, he's invited me several times to be a speaker for, I've emceed several programs for Life Remodel, most recently at St. John's out in Plymouth, Michigan. Several hundred people showed up. But, you know, as we continue down this path, I understand you also have a charter school. Is that right? Are you opening up a charter school?
We are. We got a lot of things going on. And so the charter school is going to really be one of the first of its kind to deal with children who are survivors of childhood trauma and combining them with the core subject, but also with skills trade. And so we're hoping to break ground in April on our campus in Radford and serve almost 200 students. Over the next, of course, several years as they are making that journey. But that common denominator, once again, for them is that they've survived a pretty difficult childhood, or maybe they're even in the midst of it. And having an education environment solely focused on their learning, but also expanding that to skills trade, I think is going to really set this apart from the many other options that they have.
How long have you been a CEO? How long?
It depends what day of the week you're asking.
Well, what
Mark,
year
in that case? Man, started back in 2004.
Wow.
In that case, I started at a juvenile justice facility in Indianapolis. Came in to interview as a therapist and convinced them to let me become the CEO, which worked out for me, maybe not for them as much, but I learned a lot of good things along the way through each process on that end.
Well, less than a couple of minutes remaining.
Yeah.
How can listeners get more information? How can they become more involved with everything that you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we look for anything from, of course, the time that you can provide to our children, mentoring, tutoring for our children. Of course, if you're interested in becoming a foster parent or if you're interested in adopting, there's a lot of myths out there about what it takes to become a foster parent. There's a lot of myths out there of what the adoption process is. And generally, the majority of the people who go through this find it that it is much more rewarding for them than the actual child or children that they have fostered or adopted on that end. So we're constantly looking for foster parents and adoptive parents, constantly looking for mentors and tutors, constantly seeking support with everything from back to school to children going to transition into the summer to donations, of course. So every bit helps, and all of it goes to our children and families.
And in closing, briefly, give us a website that people can get more information as well.
Yeah, absolutely. If you go to www.mchsmi.org, mchsmi.org, and of course, I'd be remiss in saying like us on our Facebook page.
Absolutely. We're going to like it for sure. Well, Kevin Roach, CEO of Methodist Children's Home Society out of Redford, Michigan, expanding into the Motor City. Thank you very much. Congratulations and much continued success.
Hey, thank you so much, Mark. It's been great being here, and thank you for taking the time to learn more about the important work that we do.
Well, Chad, I want to thank you. I know that Doak has been in full order this week. Thank you for your help this morning. And to all the listeners out there, we want to wish you a great Sunday. Happy St. Patrick's Day. We will check you out next week on Small Talk with Mark Esley, brought to you by Domino's.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.